Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Wednesday morning, the race for the White House continues. Votes are still being counted in key swing states, but despite this, early this morning, President Trump falsely claimed victory and said he would go to the Supreme Court before all the votes are counted. Later in the show, we're going to hear from experts in constitutional law and voting rights to get their perspective on what we might see in the days and weeks ahead. First, though, while the race for president is a tight one still playing out in swing states, here in Illinois, former Vice President Joe Biden had a much more decisive win, as expected. So did U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, the number two Democrat in the Senate, who easily won a fifth term. Most other congressional incumbents also did well. In Central Illinois' 13th congressional district, which got a lot of national attention and money, incumbent Republican Representative Rodney Davis fended off a second challenge from Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. She came within a point of defeating him 2 years ago, and while some mail-in ballots could affect the final tallies in the weeks ahead, Davis has a decisive 10-point lead.
And I want to thank my opponent for running a very spirited race. Once again, it takes courage and tenacity to come back again. But we believe this lead is insurmountable.
And of course, one of the big questions on the ballot last night was the graduated income tax constitutional amendment. That appears to have failed. Supporters conceded this morning. Here to dig into all of these state results and more is Amanda Vinicky, who is a reporter with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Hello, Amanda. Welcome back to the 21st. And we're connecting by Zoom. We might be having some technical issues. Make sure everybody's unmuted if we could. Listeners, I do want to invite you to join the conversation. If you voted yesterday, if you early voted, did you stay up watching the returns? Or maybe you've sort of unplugged from last night's back and forth. You can join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Once again, the number is 800-222-9455. Amanda, I think I can hear you now in the background there. Thanks for being on.
I'm here.
Glad to hear you. So let's start with the graduated income tax amendment question. Can you give us a brief overview of what was on the ballot and what are the results?
Well, the results are that it failed, and what failed was really an overhaul of how Illinois taxes its residents. Right now, everybody's taxed at one steady flat rate. That's how it's been as long as Illinois has had an income tax. And right now, that rate's 4.95%. Constitutional amendment wouldn't have changed the actual rates, but it would have given legislators a lot more freedom to do what they wanted. That's why you had Pritzker dubbing it a fair tax, because he said it would allow for, and in fact, there is a law in place for this to happen that would have kicked in January had the amendment passed. And it would have allowed for people at different income tiers to be taxed at different rates. The plan was to tax the wealthiest among us, those millionaires, 7.99%. And then individuals with incomes of $250,000 or lower would pay that pretty much same 4.95% they are now. But again, that failed. And Brian, it is really interesting because when you ask people the question generally, what do you think about the wealthy? Should they pay more in taxes? Should they pay a higher rate? People say, yeah. And in fact, we have evidence of that even in Illinois from not all that long ago, an advisory question about taxing millionaires alone. But again, that's not exactly what this amendment did. And wow, you had a whole lot of money spent on both sides trying to influence voters. And the Chamber of Commerce, big business, and Illinois' wealthiest residents, so Ken Griffin, Sam Zell, but Pritzker, also one of Illinois' wealthiest residents, not in that camp, they were the ones who won.
Yeah, and it didn't just lose. I mean, it lost. I mean, because it had two paths to victory, right? It could get 60% sort of outright, or at least 50% of the ballots cast in the election, and it only ended up getting a 45% yes vote. So it was not even sort of close. There was some thought maybe we'll have to wait until the rest of the ballots come in before we would know. This is before Election Day, but the results were fairly decisive. And we're also joined in our conversation now by Rick Pearson, who's chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, we've been talking about the graduated income tax. You had a story online this morning about that. What is next for this Illinois budget? What are the implications for the fact that this did not pass? Governor Pritzker had put a lot of stock into this.
Yeah, the implications are huge. I mean, when you look at the budget that the lawmakers passed in their kind of pandemic session in May, not only were they looking at borrowing up to $5 billion from the federal government over the loss of revenue from pandemic closures on business and other things, they were looking for federal aid from Washington, which seems questionable now if we end up with a split between the White House and Republicans controlling the Senate. This was going to raise $1.2 billion for 6 months, $3.4 billion over a year. Illinois is in a world of hurt, and you already have some of the credit rating agencies are out this morning saying that the failure of that to pass really puts us basically in junk bond status.
Amanda, you were speaking with voters about this issue. Based on what you heard, was the result surprising to you?
You know, what was surprising to me was how much confusion there still was over this. And really, you had people, I think the Pritzker campaign, trying to make this as clear as possible, dubbing it a fair tax. Commercials saying, is it fair that wealthy CEOs are paying the same tax rate as you, the secretary, the union laborer, the teacher? And still, when we talked with voters, some people said, you know, I don't like that this is going to make my taxes go up. So that was interesting to me because, of course, one of the alternatives for Illinois getting out of that budgetary pain that Rick was just talking about is a higher tax on everybody. I also think one of the things that this speaks to, and frankly, we didn't hear it a ton from voters, and just in the small sampling of folks that we got were people, you know, in Chicago who had voted in, more of them were in favor of it. But I really do think that you cannot separate the results of this from just distrust of government overall, and particularly of Illinois politicians, and particularly at this point in time with the federal investigations constantly making headlines. You cannot separate that from the results.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, go ahead, Rick.
As Amanda said, too, when you look at that advisory question before, that advisory question was a millionaire's tax. Well, you know, maybe that should have been the strategy. This is a millionaire's tax. The fair tax, the proponents completely discounted or misunderstood how opponents were going to play this. I don't think they knew Ken Griffin was going to kick in all the money that he did. And the fact that it created confusion was a victory for the opponents.
Yeah, and we talked earlier this year, I think, many of us who follow Illinois politics, about how lopsided the money was in terms of the yes side, but that certainly evened out in the end, as you said, with Ken Griffin. I had people tweeting at me this morning about this, that, you know, people saying they need to clear the old blood out of Springfield, and others said I didn't trust legislators to have complete control of the brackets and rates. And I want to now bring in a caller on the line, Corey in Rockford. You have a comment on the graduated income tax. How did you vote on the question, if I can ask?
I voted in favor of the graduated income tax, and I just wanted to say that I'm disappointed hearing the news today that it didn't pass, or the people for it have conceded. But it's disheartening to think about in a state that is in a lot of trouble. And I just really feel like this played out in a way of like misinformation to voters, because I think any normal person that heard the argument would be in favor of it.
All right. Thanks, Corey, for the call. And yeah, polling did show consistently for at least a decade prior that people sort of supported the vague concept of the graduated income tax. But when the rubber met the road, and, you know, $100 million of advertising met their eyeballs, things went a different way. So, listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky, who's a correspondent for Chicago Tonight on WTTW. We're also joined by Rick Pearson, chief political reporter from the Chicago Tribune. And I'd like to welcome another voice into the conversation. Farrah Anderson is a first-year journalism student at the University of Illinois. She was covering polling places in central Illinois yesterday for Election Day. Farrah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So you were covering Election Day at the University of Illinois in the 13th Congressional District. The Democratic candidate was counting on turnout from young voters in college towns like Champaign-Urbana, Bloomington-Normal. But we saw incumbent Rodney Davis win by a significantly wider margin than he did in 2018. So can you tell us what were the lines like at polling places at the University of Illinois this year?
Yeah, polling lines were pretty crazy all throughout campus. There were three really main polling places on campus, one at the Union, one at the YMCA, and one at the Hillel House. And almost all day we saw long lines, especially when I covered the Illini Union. There were lines wrapping through the building out onto the main quad. But students were pretty willing to wait in line and were anxious to see their votes counted, especially towards the 2020 presidential election.
And you were also in Danville, I understand. How was turnout there in Vermilion County?
Yeah, in Danville, there were a lot more people doing mail-in and early voting. Polls were pretty slow. I went to a couple polling places, one at Harrison Park Clubhouse and one at the Vermilion County Administration Building. It was pretty slow. So many people were, you know, kind of expecting a larger voter turnout through mail-in and early voting, which they did get. But there was the largest voter turnout that County Clerk Kathy Jenkins had ever seen in Vermilion County. So they had a lot more voters than they really thought, especially outside of the city of Danville. They had almost 73% of registered voters come out and vote. So they were really, really surprised. But they had all the votes in by almost 9:30. So they were very, very organized, especially outside of the city of Danville.
Interesting. So I wonder, what did you hear from, going back to the students, did you hear that students were more early voting, or were they voting in person? Were they voting perhaps in their hometowns as opposed to on campus?
Yeah, I talked to some voters, especially leading up to Election Day, and so many people had already sent in mail-in ballots, especially out of state. A lot of people said that they were voting for Joe Biden, but mainly because they were more anti-Trump than pro-Biden, if anything. But a lot of people were anxious to kind of utilize the mail-in ballot boxes that were posted along campus, especially in the main quad. But yeah, there was a really, really large voter turnout in person in Champaign, which was, you know, great to see so many lines and people really, you know, taking the time to stand in line and really, you know, get their votes counted.
All right. Farrah Anderson is a first-year journalism student at the University of Illinois. Thank you so much for being with us today on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
And we are continuing our conversation and our recap with Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune and Amanda Vinicky of WTTW. And Rick, I want to take a look at some congressional campaigns now and start with you in the 13th congressional district race between incumbent Republican Rodney Davis, Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. Like I said a moment ago, he narrowly won with just over 2,000 votes, a percentage point, back in 2018. It was a 10-point lead this time. He credits a surge in voting for President Trump helping him. I wonder, is that a story, Rick, that you are seeing playing out in other places in Illinois?
I believe that's absolutely the case. I mean, when you look at 2018 off year election, lower turnout, you had a bit of a blue wave there in part because of the governor's race, but you also had, you know, some the governor's race getting the focus. Then you had a relatively unpopular Republican governor in Bruce Rauner downstate since he had kind of gone all over the map on socially conservative issues. Republican downstate areas becoming much more conservative, socially conservative, very much the area that has the largest Trump supporters. So there's no doubt that Rodney Davis was helped immensely by the fact of having this as a presidential election year.
And Amanda, I wonder from your perspective, and I should say we need to take a break in about a minute here. But what about some of the other congressional races we were watching in the Chicago area? Sean Casten defeated former Republican State Representative Jeannie Ives, but Lauren Underwood, also a freshman Democrat, too close to call still?
Yeah, and actually the Casten Ives race was closer than had been expected, and then in Northwestern Illinois, Sherry Bustos, who heads the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, she had a tighter than anticipated race as well against a Republican. So despite talk about how blue Illinois is and how blue the suburbs are and have turned, it sure seems to be as if there's something going on there, whether it is those for whom Trump is beloved, but they don't want to admit it publicly, or what is going on there. It certainly appears as if these races that we'd by and large been written off as wins for Democrats, in part because Republicans were not putting a lot of time or attention or money to them, national Republicans, that is, that the GOP candidates fared better than expected.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation for a few minutes after we come back. Listeners, we do want to hear from you. 800-222-9455. What was your experience of Election Day like? And what are you watching today? 800-222-9455. This is the 21st. More to come. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're recapping yesterday's election results. As we mentioned at the top of the show, the race for the White House is still in play. Votes are still being counted in key swing states, and that is despite President Trump's falsely claiming victory last night and saying he would go to the Supreme Court before all the votes are counted. A little later in the show, we're going to be talking to experts on constitutional law and voting rights, getting their perspective on what we might see in the days and weeks ahead. First, though, we are talking with two of my favorite people to discuss Illinois politics. Amanda Vinicky is a correspondent for Chicago Tonight on Chicago PBS station WTTW, and Rick Pearson is chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. And listeners, we do want to hear from you. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Another important race yesterday. It did not get as much sort of statewide attention, maybe as it should have, but that was the Illinois Supreme Court retention race for Justice Tom Kilbride. This is a large district that stretches from the Quad Cities through Peoria and over to Will County in the south suburbs of Chicago. Correct me if I'm wrong. I guess I should correct myself if I'm wrong. I used to cover the Illinois Supreme Court for the Chicago Law Bulletin, but this is the first time an Illinois Supreme Court justice has failed to win retention. Can you talk about some of the dynamics in that race, Rick Pearson?
Well, yeah, you're correct on that. And when you look at the fact we are seeing the increasing, as we've seen over the last several years, the increasing politicalization of these Supreme Court seats and the money being spent on it. And here again, as we talked about Ken Griffin being a money factor for the defeat of the graduated rate tax amendment, Ken Griffin to the rescue again, throwing in some money here along with a variety of other Republican interests in trying to portray it as just a pawn of Mike Madigan and pointing to votes about things like a fair redistricting map or term limits, things that the Supreme Court has rejected as this is Tom Kilbride doing Mike Madigan's bidding. It was a money on both sides was big again. But I think here, this was a true, real kind of attachment of Mike Madigan to lead to the defeat.
Yeah, and this is, I wonder, so that I think is one storyline we're going to have to watch, is what sort of, you know, the Republican Party in Illinois has tried to make Mike Madigan a liability for Democrats for years. We've had, I can't remember which Fire Madigan campaign 1.0, 2.0, if we're on 3 or 4 or 5 at this point, but Amanda, is it sticking more now, do you think, given the increasing attention, the fact that Speaker Madigan has been not named per se or implicated, but certainly a part of a federal corruption investigation that seems to be looking at people around him and looking at him, although, again, he has not been charged or accused of anything illegal?
You know, Brian, I do think so, and in part because that campaign never really ended. When you said 1.0, 2.0, 7.0, it hasn't stopped. And voters who might have thought, hey, all of this is just politics, shush up, have maybe had those fears come realized with the federal investigation into Commonwealth Edison. So while, again, Madigan denies any wrongdoing, it is most certainly forefront in the news and higher in their minds as well. And you look at the Kilbride race, I think that probably also played an effect in the race, in the win for Congressman Davis, who used Madigan against Betsy Londrigan Dirksen. So yes, and in plenty of state races as well. When we look at how everything fared in the General Assembly, really, I was sort of, frankly, expecting a bloodbath for the Illinois GOP, particularly in House races and especially in some of the suburban races. And in part because of Trump and, as we talked about previously, the suburbs just in general turning more blue, dragged down by Trump, but also because Madigan continues to have a whole lot of money coming in, particularly from unions that he spent on behalf of members or first-time Democratic candidates. The GOP was heavily outspent and yet won some of those races, has held on. And their sole strategy in those campaigns was tying Democratic candidates to Madigan.
And we'll see, have to see as time goes on, if the Trump surge, this idea that, you know, polling, maybe national polling, state by state polling, captured this blue wave, but it failed to capture this year, possibly a red wave that was coming with the blue wave, surge of support for President Trump. And Rick, I think we're also seeing increasing polarization of downstate, right? This is a story that's been going on for years. Democrats have been losing elections in Southern Illinois and Central Illinois for years now, and that trend appears to be continuing. The party is moving back, into the suburbs, or I guess, moving more toward the suburbs in Chicago.
Yeah, I think so. But then when you look at some of these kind of results where Democrats were, you know, moving into the suburbs, winning legislative seats, eroding kind of that red firewall that Republicans erected in the collar counties outside of Chicago. Yeah, that's still going. But I mean, I think one thing we shouldn't diminish about all of these results too is the pandemic. And when you look at kind of the surge of the Trump movement coming in the latter days of the campaign, what else happened in those latter days of the campaign? We started going under more pandemic restrictions from the governor's office. And I think part of the voting here kind of dovetails with a Trump message of being anti-government, and I'm tired of these restrictions, and I want to go eat indoors at a restaurant. Those kinds of things. I think it's the effects of the pandemic restrictions can't be understated as kind of being in people's minds when they cast a vote.
Yeah, and as with any election, especially as results are still being tabulated here in Illinois, there's not quite 500,000 anymore, but still 500,000 mail-in ballots that could still come in, unlikely to swing, you know, the races that have already been called by the Associated Press and other news outlets. They tend to try and take that into account, but as we said, there are still some races that could be swung, and you know, we want to apply narratives to the election and figure out what the story is, and that is something that we'll take take time, be it the Trump surge, pandemic restrictions, Speaker Madigan's declining popularity, the governor's declining popularity. Rick, I do want to ask and come back to the Justice Kilbride. What do you have a sense of what the end game was there? I mean, there are real questions about whether, you know, how his successor will be named. Typically, the court names the successor, but if a judge retires, they put forth a name, and typically the court, with the other members of the court, will sort of approve that name to serve out that term, and then there's an open election. But that, you know, might be for a couple of years. I think redistricting was what one of the things that the backers of the campaign to have Justice Kilbride not be retained were looking at. Rick, do you have a sense of what their end game was here and whether they might succeed in that?
I think the end game was certainly just the disruption of having that deciding Democratic vote off the court. Now, of course, you know, that opens up, well, who is, you know, the whole idea of an election here, and which way does that portend? And as you noted, with that district, the way that it stretches, it encompasses still a good chunk of rural voters across the I-80 corridor down into Peoria that, you know, Republicans, they want an open seat in the court downstate. They're looking to use that to offset the balance of power.
Yeah, and I guess I will point out, as put my former Law Bulletin reporter hat on, and say that the Illinois Supreme Court districts, which there's one district for Cook County, which has three justices, and then four districts for the rest of the state, kind of divided in bands. Those maps were drawn in 1964. And one possibility I've just heard bandied about is that, you know, Democrats might want to take a look at those maps and see if there's another way, because Cook County does end up, so much of the population of Illinois is there, that those justices, they're sort of underrepresented on the Supreme Court. And downstate, far southern Illinois, is somewhat overrepresented on the Supreme Court. So just throwing that possibility out there is something to watch. Amanda, I wonder if you can talk at all about Kim Fox, who was elected as part of a wave of reform-minded prosecutors 4 years ago, but she had a challenge from a former judge. This is the Cook County State's Attorney. Can you talk about that election there?
Yeah, this is one where Kim Fox has been really under siege, given her handling of the global headline-making Jussie Smollett situation. And also, of course, we've seen a lot of unrest, violence in the city, and there are those who very much favor Fox's approach, which is one that, for example, shoplifting is not prosecuted in Cook County any longer unless it is $1,000 or more. And that is something that some people see as very much a win, focus on the violent offenders, get them off the streets. Others say that that is leading to more crime. So she did have a challenge, but this is one where I sort of had expected after she won the primary, she had sealed the race. And that is, in fact, what came to fruition.
Interesting. So I guess we do have another caller on the line, Mark in Champaign. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. My question has more to do with the national scope. Do you think it's time that maybe we really seriously reconsider the Electoral College? Whatever the result of yesterday's election, we are pretty sure that Biden is going to have a huge lead in the popular vote, and this will be the second time in a row that that's been the case. Isn't it about time that we really considered seriously the idea of one person, one vote?
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Mark. Amanda, Rick, I don't want to put you on the spot. You're reporters, not pundits in terms of, you know, making prescriptions about the U.S. Constitution. But it is an interesting question, and one we might tackle in our next segment. Go ahead, Rick, please.
I mean, one thing to consider here is that, you know, we are 50 states, and that if you just make it by popular vote, you're restricting the presidential race to the most populous states. And is that really how you want to see a campaign? I'm not saying the Electoral College is perfect by any means, But it does provide an avenue for, you know, states like, I mean, look, we were looking at the competition for a single delegate, electoral college delegate out of Maine and Nebraska. You wouldn't have that if it was just by popular vote. I mean, to me, in many respects, the Electoral College makes the election more inclusive.
Interesting, interesting. All right, well, we will continue to look at that question in the weeks ahead, and we are planning to speak just in a moment with a voting rights lawyer on in our next segment, and she may have something to add to that question about the Electoral College. I want to thank my guests for the first part of the show today. Amanda Vinicky is a reporter, a correspondent with Chicago Tonight on Chicago PBS station WTTW, and Rick Pearson is chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. I want to thank you both for being here.
Thank you.